Hey, hey, Heat Nation! Welcome back to Heaters Gonna Heat. I'm your host, Kyle Russell, here to chat a little about our favorite NBA team, the Miami Heat, who have themselves set up to play the Boston Celtics for the fourth time in the 5 years of the Jimmy era, though this time without Jimmy Butler. But the Heat obliterated the Bulls last night. We'll talk a little bit about that, and then look ahead to the game against the Celtics tomorrow, game one, first round of the playoffs. I'm saving the full breakdown of the series until Monday, just so one, little more time for me to do the prep, because I had a busy weekend myself, and then two, try to give a little bit more time for viewing before game two, so that drops Monday. Game two is on Wednesday. Let's jump right into it. I'm going to try to make this one a quick one, he said, when he never actually gets them done rather quickly. But we go to the game last night, Friday, versus the Chicago Bulls. Game Miami won 112-91. In the injury report, Terry Rozier still out. Obviously no Jimmy Butler for the Heat, especially after the news that he had a sprained MCL. Still crazy that he played three quarters on it. But Jimmy Butler out at least a month, so effectively he's going to be out the playoffs, barring the funniest thing imaginable, and the Heat just keep going to run. Duncan Robinson would return for the Heat, so good sign for Miami at least. He would come off the bench here, would start alongside Caleb, Jovic, Bam, that's been pretty consistent recently, and then Jaquez in place of Butler, which has also been something that we've seen consistently throughout the regular season. Recap for the game itself: after a sluggish start, the Heat took full control on both ends of the court, going on a 26-2 run to be up 17 after the first quarter. And yeah, feeling great. It was like 34-17. But we all know, watching this team, I mean, hell, we saw it Wednesday against the Sixers. That doesn't mean anything when it's only the first quarter. Second quarter, the Heat made no free throws and coughed up 7 turnovers en route to a 13-point second quarter. Though, they did a good enough job on the defensive end to hold the Bulls to 20 points. Would trim the lead a little bit. Heat still up 10 at the half. But again, you see it already. All right, looks like we're in for our second half. And then throughout the third quarter, the Bulls were still keeping the score around 10 points. But then over the last 3 minutes, the Heat took control of the game again to go on a 12-0 run to be up 22 going into the fourth. And then the fourth quarter itself, no dramatics at all. The Miami's lead never even got below 20 points as they thankfully cruised to the win. Lots of great games all around across the Heat roster this one, but in particular, I want to give player of the game to Tyler Hero. For as much criticism as he got against the Sixers, and a fair amount of that deserved, I mean, again, not digging him for taking those shots, just the fact that he didn't make them, and then that's what Miami needed to win that Sixers game. So for as much criticism as he got there, he deserves the praise in this one. Finished with 24 points, 10 rebounds, 9 assists, almost a triple-double. And side note, I think triple-double hunting Tyler is the best Tyler, because at least that makes him give up the ball more and try to get those double-digit assists. But 24-10-9 stat line on 8-17 from the field, 4-9 from three-point range, 4-4 from the free throw line. Really nice behind-the-back pass highlight that to Caleb Martin in the corner that's worth looking up. A little bit off, sure, but hey, it still worked. Caleb made the shot, so it's even better. Hero shook off a really cold start to finish with a strong stat line. You know, a little bit similar to that Sixers game. He started off cold for three quarters and then had it going in the fourth to try to salvage it a little bit. This time, though, he shook it off by about like the second quarter, third quarter, and was, again, powered Miami towards a pretty dominant win. Outside of Hero, though, Jaime Jaquez Jr., 21 points, 6 rebounds, 6 assists on 8-16 for the field, 1-3 from 3-point range, perfect 4-4 from the free throw line. Just kept attacking, whether in the half court or especially in transition. He just kept pushing the pace, kept trying to run it down the Bulls' throat, and to good success. 8-16, 50% from the field. Bam Adebayo, a little bit of a quieter game from him, 13 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists on an efficient 5-8 from the field, 1-2 from 3-point range. Again, just love that he is taking three-pointers consistently, at least like 2 to 3 a game now. 2 of 4 from the free throw line, still some concerns there. but mainly used his energy just hounding DeMar DeRozan and Nikola Vucevic, which also leads me to Nikola Jovic, who took the Vuce assignment at the start of the game, so Vucevic defending the Bulls center, to allow Bam Adebayo to mainly focus on DeMar DeRozan or switching off to Vucevic later on. But Jovic in particular, again, this is why he got so many reps playing center, whether in the G League or as a backup five for Miami. It wasn't so that he could play the center full time. It's so that he could do exactly this. And I've said this before. What are the requirements for like the perfect front court partner for Bam? The ability to defend center so that Bam can roam around and wreak havoc on the perimeter. Last night's game, perfect example of how Jovic is fitting into that role. More on that in the next segment when we talk about the Celtics. Just to finish this part off. Kevin Love, 16.7 rebounds, 1 assist, on 2 of 6 from the field, 2 of 3 from 3-point range, but 10 of 10 from the free throw line. The Bulls went, like, really small at certain points, and, like, Kevin Love's eyes just lit up, and he just started taking them into the post. And if he wasn't getting shots up, he didn't get a ton of shots up, sure, but he was getting to the line consistently and made him pay there, perfect 10 of 10. And Duncan Robinson returned off the bench in 12 minutes, went 3 of 6 from the field, 2 of 4 from 3-point range, so not too bad. And did look mobile. I did not see the like high speed stop, turn on a dime, and shoot the 3-pointer, that kind of Duncan, which, as I understand, based upon the type of injury he had, that makes that kind of particular twisting motion very hard for him to do. But the other facets of his game, the driving, just like spotting up, running dribble handoff, that all was still there. So was great to see that. Some quick stats to talk about for this. Mainly, Miami won this off of efficient shooting. From the field, they went 38 of 82, good for 46%. To the Bulls, 35 of 92, good for 38%. And then from three-point range, Miami a much more efficient, 14 of 33, good for 42%. To the Bulls, 13 of 43, good for 30%. So, yes, Bulls getting more volume up than Miami, but Miami doing a good job of pretty much just flattening them out and making them just take chucking threes, which didn't convert at a good rate. And the other reason for the difference in the amount of field goal attempts is the free throw disparity. Miami took a over double the amount of free throws that the Bulls did. So a good more of Miami's possessions were ending at the line than versus a field goal attempt. Miami going 22 of 24, good for 92%, versus the Bulls 8 of 10, good for 80%. So right there, right? Miami, in a game that Miami won by, what, 21 points, 14 of those points, the difference came just from the free throw line. And then some other nice stats just to close this part out. Despite losing turnovers 15 to 13, which Miami had, seven. About half of their turnovers came in the second quarter alone. So, again, highlight how bad that second quarter was. But despite losing the turnover battle, Miami still won points off of turnovers 17 to 11, which, again, and I think this links to the next part as well, Miami won fast break points 20 to 7, which I think shows that, like, well, they were turning the ball over more than they wanted. They were doing a great job of shutting down the Bulls from getting any sort of easy transition points, only finishing with 7. Whereas on Miami's side, I mean, 20 fast break points, I haven't looked at it. I wouldn't be surprised if that's a season high for fast break points for the Heat. But it goes to show Nikola Jovic and Jaime Jaquez, the two young bucks on the Heat, just really pushing pace. And I think they were a big reason why. Honestly, I think from this game, like the big takeaway I had, and I was maybe a little too much doom and gloom on the last episode, but the big takeaway from this, and that I'm taking into the next series as well, it's really great to see Miami's young players get the win. At this point, that this is what it's about. It's about the young players on Miami and what they can do for the Heat and for themselves to build for next season. Okay, let's talk a little bit of Celtics now. Looking at the injury report, to no surprise, Terry Rozier still listed out. The last thing I heard is that it could be on a week-to-week basis. So at this point, I doubt we see Terry Rozier at all, considering that this is probably going to be the only round. But maybe, depending on how things go, he could be back for Game 3. So I'm a little optimistic for that, because that'll at least give another week before we get there. Jimmy Butler, though, yeah, he's going to be out entirely, because that's like 3 to 4 weeks for a sprained MCL. So the Heat would have to get through the Celtics and then probably through the next round to get to the Eastern Conference Finals before there could even be the hint of Jimmy being back. So for now, just pretty much put Jimmy out the mind. Rozier, let's talk about it when we get to Game 3. Looking at the first round format, just since we're already kind of on that talking point as well, Game 1 will be tomorrow, Sunday at 1 p.m. It is kind of nice that the Heat played Friday night and they don't even get a full 48 hours before they have to turn around and play Game 1 tomorrow. But Game 1 Sunday, Game 2, Game 1 and Game 2 in Boston. Game 2 will be Wednesday night, so 2 days, Monday, Tuesday off until the Wednesday night game. And then another 2 days, 2 days off Thursday, Friday until Game 3 Saturday, which will be in Miami. And then Game 4 also in Miami the following Monday. And then after that, well, after that, he got to not get swept first. So then we'll worry about Game 5, 6, or 7 if we even get there. So first up, game tomorrow, Sunday against the Celtics. This is the Celtics team that finished 64-18, first overall in the East. Miami went 0-3 against them in the regular season, last played mid-February. So some differences, I guess, mainly with like Jovic starting more now, but Rozier's out. Hero's, I think he was back for that last game. I can't even remember. It's tough. But it's also the regular season, and Miami looks very different without Jimmy Butler at this point. Looking at the injury report for the Celtics, they're fully healthy, and damn, that must be nice. Don't know what that's like over here. So looking forward to this game itself, I'll be honest, game one, we're probably getting smacked around. Again, sorry if I sound gutless, but I mean, like, this team has had about 40 hours in between games on top of the Celtics being rested, on top of the Celtics more or less being rested for about the last months, considering that they had the first seed in the East wrapped up, whereas Miami has been fighting tooth and nail and through all different kinds of injuries and assortments just to limp to this point. And I do kind of understand a counter-argument where, hey, the Miami Heat were in a very similar situation like this last year with the Bucks as the first seed, you know, only less than 2 days turnaround, and then they end up winning Game 1. Yes, but Giannis also got injured in Game 1 early on. And yes, the Heat were ahead, but there was so much of that game left that you can't tell me a healthy Giannis couldn't have swung Game 1 back towards the Bucks. So unless you're counting on an injury for Boston, and I don't like counting on injuries, I think that's just bad juju, I just don't see how we don't get smacked tomorrow. But what I would look for tomorrow, beyond just like, hey, can we win the game, is just, is there stuff that the Heat can take away to maybe try to steal Game 2. So where I'm looking at this is primarily like, how does Miami defend Boston and how does Miami attack Boston? So in the defending Boston part, I think it's the pretty obvious part, and you saw, this is why you saw it last night against the Bulls, it's going to be putting Jovic on Kristaps Porzingis. So that way, Bam can roam off more, probably guard Tatum. If not Tatum, then maybe Brown. But I would imagine on Jason Tatum just because you want to shut him down. But essentially that allows Jovic, who has a little more height, a little more reach, to contest Porzingis better. But just have him stick on Porzingis. I would even go like a diamond in one where Jovic is just man-on-man versus Porzingis. You do the diamond so that way Bam can still sink and zone up on the rim. And that's what you try. I don't know if you could do it at the NBA level. Maybe this is a crazy thing to even propose. But I mean, in this kind of matchup where you're vastly overpowered, you know, go crazy. Why not? But Jovic on Porzingis to allow Bam roam, I think that's going to be the basis of the game plan. And then Jaime Jaquez, I think if Bam has Tatum, then Jaquez probably on Drew Holiday, just because Drew likes to post up a little bit. And then that allows Hero on White and Caleb to be on Jaylen Brown, then try to get up in his space, see if he can get some turnovers. I think that'll be the basic game plan. And if the Celtics want to go maybe like a little bit bigger with like a Horford instead, so then, yeah, then maybe you do Jaquez and Horford. If not, then, well, maybe this is why Spoelstra put Jaquez on Jason Tatum in like the first week of the season. Maybe he somehow knew like further ahead, like, hey, let's go ahead and get Jaquez reps on Tatum now, in case we need that in a Boston series later on. And then the last part for the defensive end, and I guess like my question here is, how will the 2-3 zone stand up against Boston's 3-point shooting? Because throughout the regular season, it got worked, especially when they would run actions with Porzingis up at the top, just because it's really hard for Haywood and Caleb to zone up at the top of it and still contest Porzingis' shot. So if Porzingis has a go, and then that's it. That's where I was thinking, like, if you want to do some zone stuff, maybe it has to be something more like a diamond in one, where you can still get some zone elements in there, like, again, Bam dropping back and covering the rim. But still you allow, like, a Jovic or maybe a Kevin Love, somebody tall enough to stay by Porzingis and contest a shot. So that's defending Boston, then the attacking Boston. First up, it's, hey, congratulations, Tyler Herro. You got yourself quite a matchup here. Going up against Jrue Holiday and Derek White backcourt, and they'll just take turns making Hero's life hell. And then Hawkins will have, himself an interesting time going up against the more physical wings, Tatum and Jaylen Brown. And hey, Hawkins, how do those attacks at the rim work when you're going up against these larger, more experienced wings? And then for Bam Adebayo, one of the things that comes to mind is that first game against Boston, not only because of Hawkins defending Tatum, but also because Bam Adebayo got Kristaps Porzingis in foul trouble fairly early in that game, though they did ultimately still lose it. But still, the Heat almost won it in part because of that. So I go back to, hey, Bam Adebayo, you're not going to be able to shoot over Porzingis, so you're probably going to have to either get him off balance, get it to the foul line, or get past him. So the Bam versus Porzingis is, like, what can Bam get against Porzingis, and what kind of help defense can he force towards him? And can Bam hurt Boston with his three-pointer? Like, again, he's taking 1 to 2 a game, usually knocking down one. Does the volume go up now that we're in the playoffs, or does it still stick around there and eventually pulls some of Boston's defenders further out to try to cover him? Again, all kinds of things that I'm just looking for tomorrow. And depending upon how that goes, then I can talk on the next episode about, hey, can the Heat pull off a game this series? The good news is that we now have at least a few more guaranteed games. So I'll dive a little bit more deeper into this on Monday's episode when I have a bit more time as well. For now, I do thank you for hanging around. That'll be all for this episode. Please, if you can, follow the pod at Heaters Heating and myself at KBR Heat Culture off of X, Twitter, whatever you want to call it. Also, check out the other great pods we have at OTG Basketball, Celtics Lab, Full Access Pacers, Brooklyn Buzz. Links for everything are in the show notes as usual. I'll be back on Monday. Until then, hope you all have a great weekend, Heat Nation.